Welcome to Bad Patient, Malpractice Makes Perfect. I'm Robin Donovan.
And I'm Laura Bierce.
And we are two non-medical, non-experts sifting through this week's health news.
And this week's words are nostrils, adrenal, digestive system, and jelly beans.
And before we even get started, Laura, I have to take offense with the choice of jelly beans as one of the topics. Because as you know, Easter is coming up, I've heard, but there's also a much more special and important holiday that is going to fall on the day that this podcast publishes. And so I'd rather see something related to that very important day.
I mean, what do you think the adrenal gland story is about?
Is it?
No.
All I can tell you is that it's very disheartening to be someone who sees St. Patrick's Day as the most important holiday of the year and have to sift through pound after pound of Easter candy in stores in order to find, like, a single green garland with which to decorate. However, I was successful at the Dollar General last night, and I purchased $9 worth of decorations, which you can understand is a lot of decorations at the Dollar General. They're not all useful, and they're not all beautiful. They will all be posted in various places in the apartment. So,
okay.
I think I'm prepared.
Just a mild suggestion for next year.
Yeah.
Don't go the day before.
Oh, you think maybe they were sold out?
Yes.
That's what I like to think, but honestly, I don't think so. I think that the display was just smaller than last year. And the saddest thing about this display was that it wasn't that they took all the St. Patrick's Day stuff and put it on the little stand. They just took some St. Patrick's Day stuff that they had and then a bunch of random green things. So there was Mountain Dew and there were green sand buckets and just stuff that doesn't make any sense. And I was like, what am I supposed to buy? I'm not serving Mountain Dew with my corned beef. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've understood that the way that we prepare the meal here in the U.S. may not be entirely traditional, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Mountain Dew, not an Irish beverage.
Oh, it's super Irish.
It's, like, super not good for you.
I mean, it doesn't mean it's not Irish.
Come on. Beer has minerals or something. I don't know.
That seems made up.
All right, Laura, what's our first story?
So our first story comes from Time, and it's, you asked, is it bad to pick your nose?
Should we guess before we even read the story? You already read the story.
I already read the story. This story should actually be called How to Keep Your Nostrils Happy.
Okay. So how do I do it?
So basically, it's talking about the dangers of picking your nose.
Ew.
And different things that can come of it. So, did you know that your under your nail bed is just a hotbed of bacteria?
Yeah, I think I did know that.
And sticking it into your nose is not, like, the best. And if you pick your nose and you create a tear, it can cause irritation and bleeding, and so then it'll scab over and then you're more likely to pick at it, and it just creates a vicious cycle.
Oh no. Okay, I've experienced this, because if you ever have, like, a cold and you, like, blow your nose so much that there's, like, you know, whatever, there gets, like, a cut in there or something, and then all the blood, it's so uncomfortable because it just feels like there's something gigantic in your nose.
Yes. So your skin in your nose is more fragile than the skin on your nose, and so basically it suggests that you not pick your nose.
They refer to this habit as nose mining in the article.
Yeah, so if nose you want to keep your nostrils happy, don't pick your nose. Like they say, you can pick your friends, you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose.
Trimming nose hairs can also cut down on irritation. I've had this discussion with my coworkers about nose hairs because we all attend trade shows together, and there are sometimes certain folks who we notice have more of a garden situation in their nose. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And sometimes when these people have a slightly elevated height, it becomes more noticeable that they have a healthy proliferation of, you know, hair. And so my one coworker who's really tall was telling me he has like a special trimmer. He's like, no, I know, because I'm really tall. Everyone's going to look up and see. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he's doing the world a service.
What are you trying to say about me, Robin?
Because you're tall?
Yeah.
You thought I was tall until I told you I wasn't, so.
Yes, and then I stood next to you and realized you were not tall. That was my second clue.
I want to say that I'm over the average height for women, but I'm in between the average height for women and the average height for men, which makes me almost the perfect definition of average height.
True.
Also, fun fact, I'm not quite sure exactly how tall I am. I know within maybe a half of an inch, but I'm not totally certain. So,
well, at your next physical.
It doesn't matter. They measure it differently every time, up to an inch different.
Well, stand so very still and demand that they do it 5 times. That'll endear you to them.
Listen, I don't think you're busy, and I don't think your time is valuable, and what would be valuable for me is if you simply measure me over and over until we have a really good sense of how tall I am. Well, it's been a problem on a couple dates because men who would write down that they were 5'6 would occasionally feel that I was not 5'6".
Mm-hmm.
And that's an uncomfortable moment when someone's like, you're not 5'6". And I would think, well, because part of me is thinking, yeah, maybe you're right. I could be 5'7". I'm not entirely sure. But I also thought, you know,
neither are you.
No. Yeah. I more suspected that they weren't 5'6" than that I wasn't 5'6". Also, my height is as advertised on said dating profile, so I cannot be, you know, accused of any tomfoolery here. What you see is what you get, plus or minus an inch. And that's the best I can do, you know? Measuring error. Or what do they call that? When there's like a little buffer? Margin of error.
So, yeah.
This story is gross. And I think the answer to the question in the title is no. It's probably not really that bad to pick your nose. I thought they were going to talk about, like getting viruses and stuff from, like, doing that, you know?
It's included in here. They talked about the way that you get viruses, like, for flu-like symptoms is through getting it into your system. And one of the ways that it can get into your system is through your nose. And so sticking the coated finger into your nose can make you sick.
Ugh. God, all right, I just finally had the shudder response to this whole story. I'm done. We have to move on. I'm going to be sick. This is disgusting.
Well, just keep it in perspective. It's not something that's keeping public health officials awake at night, so probably don't that's have to worry to about it.
nose mining. All right, next story.
So our next story comes from News Medical, and it is, researchers take first step in generating artificial adrenal gland. Do you know what an adrenal gland is?
Yes.
So I feel like this should be called, like, Uncovering the Hidden Mysteries of an Adrenal Gland, because I had no idea what an adrenal gland is. So the adrenal gland is on top of your kidneys? Yep. And they are responsible for releasing different hormones. And if you have a adrenal gland disorder, it can be because there's too much or too little of these hormones being produced. And so they created an artificial adrenal gland using urine of healthy donors and patients with congenital adrenal disorders. And
that's sweet.
It was reprogrammed. So I just thought it was a really cool study. And it was the first step in generating artificial adrenal glands, which could benefit all patients with adrenal insufficiencies.
And I think that adrenal insufficiencies can actually be really dangerous because there's, I don't know, there's a ailment that I think is not generally accepted in, like, mainstream medicine. So who knows if it's real or whatever, but people talk about, like, adrenal fatigue. But so whether or not that's real, through reading about that, I've heard that, like, actual adrenal problems can be really dangerous because these things, like, I don't know, like, I know it produces adrenaline, but I think it can be, like, deadly, I think.
Oh, wow. So I had no idea that I had an adrenal gland.
Where did you think adrenaline came from? I'm kidding. That was, like, such a jerk question.
My brain. I thought it came from my brain.
It just, your brain was just cranking out this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, my brain produces dopamines.
Just dopamine, yo. Just dopamine. There's
dopamine. That's the one that I can for sure pull out at the top of my head. Dopamine is the one that makes you feel good, right?
Yeah, dopamine is one of the ones. What's the other one? The exercise one? Because dopamine, I think, is like the love one. Endorphins? No.
Yeah, endorphins for like the runner's high? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I think that's what
it is.
So
I know like when you work out, when one engages in physical activity, your brain releases endorphins, which, you know, they're thought of as like, it's like the happiness chemical or whatever. And they like reduce the perception of pain. And so there's a lot of this like released in like the process of labor and birth as well. And then dopamine, I think, is associated with the feeling of love. I don't know. Let me see. So it's a neurotransmitter. Okay, Wikipedia just says it plays a major role in reward-motivated behavior. Oh, it must not be the love one. I forget what that is. Oh, dopamine might be the addiction one. But anyway, there's all these, like, little substances in your brain that are, like, associated with certain, like, feelings.
Yeah, so that's what I thought adrenaline was.
All right, that's fair. You thought it was, like, a neurotransmitter.
Yeah, like, your brain sends out the signal that you need to be doing shit.
Okay.
I didn't think it came from a thing on top of my kidneys. That seems way weirder to me. But, like, the thing on top of my kidneys is saying, all right, let's do shit. Like,
or the thing on top of your kidneys is saying, like, oh, we might be about to die. Let me give you a hit of this stuff so you feel like running away or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Because the adrenaline is associated with stress, so it kicks up your circulation and your breathing and your like carbohydrate metabolism. So it's like the fight or flight thing. If you're like, someone's about to hit me in the head with a baseball bat, your body's like, boom, so you're like ready to respond.
No, my body's like, wow, somebody just hit me in the head with a baseball bat.
your body is like in slow motion, it's like, don't do that. No.
Yes, you should have dodged.
And mine is, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? I like to think of my inner voice as like slightly higher pitched, you know? You must be joking me. Are you serious? I will tell you. So about tangent, about are you serious moments. So I had like just come back from that meditation course I went to.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you to all of our listeners for pardoning a longer interruption in our recent programming. I was out of town and I was going to the grocery store and it was the end of like a long day. Like I had woken up at 5 a.m., had like driven to some mountain, had like tromped around in the snow, had like processed a bunch of emotions, was finally like home. It's 7 p.m. I'm trying to go to the grocery store. I pull into the lot. There's like a space open to my left. There's a space open to my right. And on my right, I see a guy pull in where, you know, there's like two spaces lined up and you can either pull through or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, he sees me. No. So as I'm waiting to see what he's going to do, he pulls through. And in that moment, in that same moment, this guy on like a little moped pulls into the spot on my left. And I literally was like, like, it's that moment when one person steals your spot, but like times two. And I was like, I guess this is what all of that meditation is for. But part of me was also really genuinely like annoyed. I was like, what are the odds of this?
That they took both bastards.
That they, yeah, I was like, I mean, and I'm fine. Like, I found another space. I just was like, do you not see me here? Like, or, but I guess, you know, the moped probably thought that I was waiting on the other guy. So he like zipped into that space. And the first guy, I think, just genuinely like did not see me or just didn't think about it or God knows. It's Portland. It's hard for me to imagine that anyone was actually genuinely trying to steal my space. I mean, that would be ruder than a honk in this city.
And
a
honk. Oh, shit.
A honk is like, people will like make a comment. Like if someone honks and you're walking, you say, oh, oh my, what do you think that person's problem is? Like you wonder to yourself, you know, what's going on with that person? It would be like if you saw someone just like take a dinner plate and smash it on the sidewalk. You'd say like, oh, I wonder what's going on there. That's the reaction to a car honking.
Mm.
It's like this very unusual behavior has occurred. I hope everything's all right for that person.
That's funny because I witnessed a car honk, and because they were turning through a red light, and the person whose green light he was wasting by his very slow turn honked, and the guy who was turning very slowly felt that the appropriate response was to lay on his horn. So I guess
I like that.
I guess that's the difference. It was like beep, and it was like like I don't know. And I thought, well, that was totally necessary.
Well, it is kind of strange. I mean, if someone's going but they're going too slowly, I don't think that a honk is appropriate. I mean, they're going, you know, they have their own. We're all different. We all have different paces in life, you know.
From my perspective, he entered the intersection after his light had turned red and turned left. Because it was very solidly green. Like, not that it just turned green and he was still turning. Like, it was green. He entered. He turned. And it was like, you're using my signal kind of a thing.
Yeah. He's stealing time from you in a way.
Yeah. Bastard.
That was such a long tangent that I can't remember what we were even talking about.
We were talking about adrenal glands and honking and how the polite Midwest is not as nearly as polite as the polite Northwest.
The Northwest just wants you to be okay on a deep spiritual level, and they don't want to harsh your vibe by honking at you. If they do honk at you, they are quite upset.
You've really fucked up?
You have messed things up all the way. I did. Yeah, I had one of those. I was in a wee bit of a rush, and I was crossing a busy four-lane street from, like, a non-busy street. So I was just waiting for all the traffic to go by. And I just didn't, I saw, you know, you're looking back and forth and there was this guy coming that I kind of didn't see. And so I slammed on the brakes. He slammed on the brakes. He honked. I like held my hand up, mouthed the word, sorry, the things that we do, you know, but he wasn't having it. He kept honking. And I can't say that I had a positive response to that.
That's okay. I've had some definite road rage instances with regards to people honking at me, and I've honked back because I didn't think I did anything wrong. It was more of an acknowledgement toot than like an angry toot, but then I have had the asshole drive around me and flip me off, and so I returned that favor. Ooh. And then I just, I have held it for 15 miles, just flipping them off.
Wow. Yeah, I mean,
I've had some aggression.
15 miles?
Yeah.
15 miles.
He went north and I went south. That was the end of it. Otherwise, it would have continued.
I mean, I can understand in certain cases. In this case, even the really long honk felt legitimate to me. Like, it was dangerous. And but then I thought, well, what do you want me to do? I stopped so that he could go around me if he wanted, like, let him have the right of way. I apologized. I waved. I was like, okay, would you like to honk at me until infinity passes? Or so then I just went, because I was like, well, you're not going to stop. He was busy teaching me a lesson. And the lesson that I learned is that I guess I don't have to be that careful, because some people are just going to be angry no matter what you do. No, I don't know. It was an unfortunate day, but yeah, sometimes I think you get to someone in a special way.
Yeah.
Whoops. Sorry.
All right. You ready for our next article?
Yeah, but I want to point out that we're halfway through and we haven't come to the St. Patrick's Day story yet. So I will just be pleasantly anticipating its arrival.
Excellent. I'm glad you'll be pleasantly awaiting that for a while. So our next story comes from the Chicago Sun-Times. And it's stomach, digestive system health. What's your gut telling you? So it's talking about how it's important to have a healthy digestive tract. So it's like bullion digestive tract, telling you all about it. And so it's talking about some people who have suffered from IBS. And this man is 56 and he's been suffering from IBS for 43 years, and that just made me really sad for him.
Yeah.
And so essentially, and he also has Crohn's disease. Do you know what Crohn's disease is?
Yeah, I do. I've known some people that had it.
I'm not familiar with it. Can you tell me more about it?
Yeah, I'm not like 100% on like the mechanism behind it happening, but it's kind of like an extreme gut sensitivity, such that like people have difficulty digesting food and they'll have like really severe gastrointestinal symptoms based on all sorts of things. So they can be almost like, it would be like a ton of food sensitivities. And a lot of these people end up having to have like a piece of their bowel removed, even, because the bowel becomes like diseased and has to be taken out, or becomes like so inflamed that it's, you know, it's like not useful anymore. So it's just like, it's like a type of inflammatory disease. But I think like, unlike other things, like unlike a food allergy that if you eat the food, it's bad. If you don't eat the food, you're fine. This is kind of something that I think tends to develop in people. And so they can have all sorts of problems. Like as time goes on, it can kind of get worse. And so, yeah, it's, I think it's lesser known, maybe because people don't talk about it a lot. But I think some of these people, you know, they end up like having really, really urgent need to like find a restroom immediately, types of like day-to-day experiences, or just like a lot of dietary restrictions, and can end up in the hospital, you know, over and over and over trying to deal with the symptoms. And so, I mean, it's, yeah, it's really, really, it can be really disruptive.
Yeah. So this is talking about, IBS in general, and it's looking at like how people adjust to it and how they kind of test for it, and how it's not really a very easy thing to test for, and how some people respond to different things in different ways. So sometimes it's best to have. The best diet is one with lots of soluble fibers, which dissolve in water, such as apples, pears, carrots, berries, and oatmeal. But for others, sometimes it's best to have a diet with insoluble fibers, such as asparagus, kale, celery, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts. And then they said to avoid foods in high fructose, such as mangoes, cherries, pomegranates, watermelon, and grapefruit. I just thought that was funny. But my personal favorite is, as well as high sugar alcohol foods, such as ketchup.
I didn't realize that ketchup had sugar alcohol in it.
Ketchup, barbecue sauce, and fruit-flavored snack foods.
Do they mean, like, fruit snacks?
I don't know. it's fruit flavored snack food, so I'm gonna say yes, fruit snacks would be fruit flavored snacks.
I'm thinking like, you know, your Gushers,
yeah,
your whatever's,
your Welch's.
Can we just say that those things are really good, like really
delicious? They are delicious.
And they, I don't know what it is,
100% of your vitamin C, and it's just like delightful.
Such BS. They're like candy to which they've added a vitamin. Yeah, I can see this being super frustrating because you kind of like don't know what you can't have. And like what this guy in the, what we're looking at with the guy in the example, it's like he can only eat a banana if it's mashed up or if he has time to chew it really, really thoroughly. Can you imagine?
It just seems like something I would fuck up somehow.
Yeah, I feel like I'd be eating the banana too fast. Although, I guess if it really hurts you, you learn how to do it.
Yeah, so I just thought it was interesting. So they also discussed the fact that probiotics and prebiotics are not regulated by the FDA, and the science does not prove that they do anything, which I think is an important point. I know it's a thing that's sold to us as consumers. And then it's also talking about how basically the American diet is terrible for IBS as well.
So that makes sense.
In case you were concerned, it's still bad for everyone.
In case we were wondering, Americans need to eat better and exercise. We can stop our podcast. We'll just put up a single sentence. Americans, eat better, exercise. Everyone else, do your best.
Do the best that you can.
I don't know if I agree with the thing about probiotics and prebiotics. Like, I could agree that maybe there's not a lot of research, but there is, I mean, there's some concrete research, I think, about probiotics and C. diff. There's certainly, I know there's definitely research about fecal transplants and C. diff. So C. diff is like a really virulent form of diarrhea, essentially, where it's an infection that causes that. Mm-hmm. And it's often like hospital acquired. It can be super, super, super contagious. But I know that, like, altering your microbiome in that case, they've proven it definitely does help. So.
Yes, but the prebiotics and probiotics that are being sold to us are not regulated. And there's no way to guarantee that what's in the bottle is actually in the bottle. I think that's more of the major issue. It's not that that it wouldn't necessarily work, but that, like, just because it says it on the bottle doesn't mean that it's going to have the effects and that it's in there.
That it's active.
Right.
Yeah, and I think there's like a million, like I looked into probiotics for a minute because I heard about some supplement, like a triathlon podcast, and I was like, I don't know, like I'll look into it. But there's a million different strains that you can get. And there's like sometimes a small amount of evidence that one strain might be helpful for one symptom. But if you're looking at yourself as like a complex person, you know, all these different things, I think it's, as far as I can tell at this point, there's no concrete, like, if you feel this way, then use this. And like you say, the lack of regulation isn't doing anyone any favors. It's like we've done enough research to know that a healthy microbiome is really, really important, but we can't tell anyone how to get one.
Yeah.
Is what it feels like to me. We're like, it would be like saying, like, hey, you really need to eat fruits and vegetables, but there aren't any sold at stores, and we don't know where you could find them, and even if you do find them, they might not be real fruits and vegetables. So you really need fruits and vegetables, but...
We're not sure what that means.
Yeah, we're not sure how you can accomplish this. Frustrating. Yeah.
Very annoying. I don't know. It's the fruits, you know, the ketchup, the classic vegetable.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's like half the problem in the country is behaviors around stuff, and the other half is general bad behavior. You know, like, let's just not regulate. They don't need to know what's in this. They're good, you know? Like, I sometimes can't believe it, that they don't regulate it.
Just do your best and just trust that it's true.
Yeah, okay. Let's just hope that everything's good. I mean, that's fine for you, right? You know?
Absolutely. That's how I like to live. Personally, I like a little gamble in my probiotics.
I mean, throw some extra bacteria in there. They might help me in ways that I can't guess yet.
Hang on one second. Let me pick my nose so that way I can make sure to have full.
What you're saying is
flu like symptoms.
You need a break for some nose mining?
Yeah, hang on. Let me trim these hairs up.
Because you're tall, so you need to be careful about that.
Would you tell me if I had, like, crazy nose hairs?
Yeah, dude.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you walk around all weird looking. I think that is an interesting social experiment / conundrum. If, like, will people tell you things like, I think it's a mark of a certain level of relationship if someone will tell you if you have food in your teeth or if they won't.
Yeah.
It's very, to me, it's very sad when they, you know, you get home from somewhere and you're like, oh, that's been there for hours. No one said a thing. And you're like, oh, like we're not as close as I thought that we were.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I will say something because I want people to avoid that sadness, but I guess if I really don't know the person, like, well at all, I might not. It's a weird thing, though. Why wouldn't
we just
tell
people?
Have you
ever told any of the people at the fairs that you go to that they have,
No.
All right, so.
Nose hairs? Yeah, I mean, okay, I don't know. Okay, one, I don't know if they care. Like, part of me thinks food in your teeth is, like, a universal. No one's going to say, like, that's fine. But, like, personal, like, what do you call that, maintenance, not hygiene, like, upkeep, you know, it seems, I could see someone saying, like, why do I need to trim hairs in my nose or my ears? It doesn't make any difference. It's not dirty. But, oh, Laura, it's just sometimes they're just a little, I want to not be judgmental about it, but I feel like it just, it's a little gross to me.
Good.
This is like our gross week. Mm-hmm. Nose picking, nose hairs, and ugh.
Keep your nostrils happy.
I mean, jeez.
Keep Robin happy.
That's a taller order. All right, so our last story has got to be the St. Patrick's Day story. Is there going to be Irish music? Do you think, should I do a small Irish jig here?
Yeah, let's just take a quick pause for the classic Robin jig.
A jig break? It's going to sound, it's like Riverdance over here.
Thank you, Robin, for that beautiful Robin
interpretation.
Irish dancing. So this one comes from candystore.com. And it's America's favorite jelly beans by state.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Yeah. I just wanted to let you know that somebody has done research on this. So
is this jelly belly flavors, though? Because
it is.
What?
Jelly Bean Day is April 22nd.
Okay,
and
that's fine.
It's looking at 10 plus years of sales data and a survey that was very highly scientifically done. So it's SurveyMonkey and Facebook polls. and they came up with the 32 most popular flavors. And they weighted the sales and survey data of 90 to 10% respectively. And the flavor recent sales data over older data. So here are the results. The number one flavor, Robin, is buttered popcorn. Yes, it's polarizing. But it's also America's number one favorite jelly bean flavor. Thousands of people love this smooth, salty, and savory jelly bean the best. While others scrunch up their noses when it's mentioned. Some even write nasty comments in their survey forms. But when the results are tallied, more people love buttered popcorn flavor than any other.
All right. First, I want to just say, this survey is very unscientific. Second, I want to say that based on the number two choice, black licorice, I would like to throw out all of the findings because I feel like black licorice, in my experience, is the least liked jelly bean flavor by almost everyone except for a few people who irrationally love it. So based on the fact that the people they surveyed put black licorice as number two, I feel like I'm not surprised that buttered popcorn is number one. And that, come on, that is like the worst. I mean, the only one I like less than that is maybe that coconut one. Or is there one that's like vanilla? There's like another white one. I always know with the Jelly Bellies, you get the white ones, and you might as well just throw them away. Robin, they're no good.
Robin. What? Old people eat jelly beans. Old people eat licorice.
That's why... okay. Wait. That's a very ageist way of looking at it.
Old people like licorice.
They do. What is that? Why is it... You take someone in their 20s, no affinity for black licorice. Fast forward 55 years,
probably
it's all
nostalgia.
They can eat.
Because it's like, mm-hmm. It's from like the 70s. So I believe you said that your favorite was pear or juicy pear?
Juicy pear.
And that was number six. Oh,
they are so good. They are so good. Oh my gosh.
Then this website breaks it down with the 32 top flavors, and it's just too much. But then they have the top flavor
by state.
So I live in Ohio, so we clearly need to figure that out. And it is your favorite flavor, buttered popcorn.
Buttered popcorn.
And you live in Oregon, and they love the watermelon.
Okay, I can handle watermelon. That's fine.
So
yeah, black licorice.
My dad loves black licorice.
Well, I mean, we can't all be perfect.
And my dad is old.
Ugh. Well, you're bringing this topic to my attention at a fortuitous time because based on jaw wonkiness, I don't do a lot. I don't do a lot of jelly beans. I don't do a lot of gum. But usually once a year, I have like a month of, shall we say, hedonism and joy. And that month is usually March. And obviously we're right in March when a lot of great things happen, like, I don't know, for example, St. Patrick's Day or, you know, another just random example, my birthday. So just in case you forgot, also your birthday.
My birthday. So,
yeah. But so sometimes during the month of March, I think to myself, life is short. Gum is delicious. Let's give this a wee bit of a shot. But as I told you the other night, the gum that I tried this year was the Trident Swedish Fish flavor. It was layered, three layers. It was the most disappointing gum I have ever chewed. I mean, it lost the flavor within 10 seconds, and it never tasted like a Swedish fish to begin with. So now I'm left with this intense craving for, like, good gum, only I don't chew gum, so I don't know what good gum is. But I want, like, a fruity flavor. So if you're out there, you can give me a gum recommendation. You can email hello@thebadpatient.com. Hook me up. There's not that many days left in March. But, yeah, I'm just, like, starving for, like, gummy candy, which is the opposite of what the wonky jaw would prefer that I consume. But, man, there's something so satisfying about the texture, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what is your current medical fascination?
Well, someone shared with me a video about chronic pain today, and it was just kind of like a basic, like, 101. But one of the things he was talking about was, like, a timeline, so considering a type of pain chronic after it had been 3 months. And it got me thinking about the kind of, like, arbitrary nature of that. So, you know, it's, like, 2 months and 29 days. It could be anything. 3 months. It's chronic, stop looking for tissue damage, like, accept your lot in life kind of a story. I shouldn't say accept your lot in life, that wasn't what the video said. But yeah, I was just kind of thinking through that differentiation and that timeline and, like, what does it mean for something to, like, transition, you know, in terms of, like, how we think about it or our ability to heal from it. Like, does labeling it one way or the other make it more or less likely that we would recover? It's kind of thinking about that, so... Because there's a lot of, like, arbitrary things with medical treatment. You know, it's like they have to make a line somewhere, and so they just say, like, well, this is normal and this is not. Or this is acute, this is chronic. This is, you know, like, how often you have to get your teeth cleaned. Like, why is it every 6 months and not every 7 months? Or, you know, a lot of things are kind of just the way they are because we had to put some we had to put something, some label on it, right? We had to, like, standardize it in some way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Can you think of other things that are, like, randomly standardized?
I mean, it's like your eye appointment. It's every year.
Yeah. You, I'm pretty sure I don't glaucoma need an eye appointment. Yeah.
Test, yeah, or whatever.
What? It's like every year because it's easy for you to remember, right? Because if it was every 14 months, you'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah. So what's the difference? It's just how we break up our calendar.
And I know sometimes, like, they'll tell us certain things, but there's, like, a buffer built in. So my, what's the person? Is it an optician, optometrist, whoever does your eye exam? I guess, who knows? I guess it could be either, possibly. But that person, the last one of those that I saw, told me that your contact lenses that say they have to be taken out every night for at least 6 hours or whatever it is can actually safely be worn for, like, I can't remember what she said, like a day or two. But that she said, you know, they label the package as maximum of however many hours so that there's, like, a buffer so that you're not going to, like, go blind if you mess it up. You know, they're not going to give you the actual maximum because, like, that wouldn't be safe. Because then, you know, they said, oh, it's, you know, we recommend once a day, but you'll be okay for 3 days. Then you'd have people wearing them for 5 and 7 days, and then you'd have, like, real problems.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, but it's kind of, I think it's interesting how we meter out that information and how that could, like, change someone's behavior or perception. And then I wonder about, because of, you know, the placebo effect and the mind-body connection, like, how we potentially influence healing by the information that we give people.
Yeah.
So.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, happy belated birthday, Laura.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Robin.
Thank you. Let's just forget that Easter even exists.
Okay.
Well, I think that's enough bad patienting for me for one day. Do you think we covered everything adequately? I mean, I know we covered some important topics: nose picking, jelly beans, adrenal glands, hormones.
I mean,
you think we did a good job?
Yeah, I think we did a great job. The only thing I don't think we covered was Klingon glottis, friend or foe. I think that's the only thing that we basically missed.
Wait, what did we miss?
The glottis, friend or foe?
I cannot understand what you're saying.
Like the glottis, like the glottal stop, the...
Oh, whether it's friend or foe?
Yeah.
I mean, I think friend.
Okay.
What do you think?
I mean, maybe that's something we'll discuss in another week.
Wait, is that a hint for me?
No.
All right. Well, while we're still officially on the record here, I would like to request a St. Patrick's Day related story. And I know I'm not allowed to request stories. I'm not supposed to have any input, but I'm just saying.
Okay, we'll make sure to do it for next week, for next year.
All right. All right. Well, I'm going to hold you to that. So thanks, everyone, for listening. The best recommendation you can give us is to share our information with friends and family who might be interested in checking out the podcast. You can listen at thebadpatient.com, Apple Podcast app, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also email us your questions, comments, suggestions, or topics you want us to cover at hello@thebadpatient.com. And we want to give a thank you to Evan Schaefer, our composer, for our theme song.
Thanks, Evan.
You can listen to his music at soundcloud.com/Evan Schaefer. Until next time, we are bad patients.
Malpractice makes perfect.